Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. On this episode, we pay tribute to Grant Wall. We share our thoughts about the World Cup thus far, as well as discussing news from Major League Soccer about their finally finished television deal and progress in streaming for non-league football fans in the Vanarama. My name is Christopher Harris. I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Plus, of course, we also have our letters from you, the listeners, in the listener mailbag segment. So we'll get to those in a little bit. But first of all, Kartik, we're recording this before the World Cup final. Argentina against France. What do you think? You think those are two worthy teams to be in the final?
I suppose so. I'm pretty awed by the fact that France lost so many key parts. And have gotten contributions from players that were cut from the Euro team, right? We know Deschamps very kind of strangely, well, I shouldn't say strangely, there was a justification for it, but cut Theo Hernandez from the Euro squad and took Kurt Zuma because Zuma supposedly got along better with the rest of the dressing room. Upamecano was cut from the Euro squad, even though he was in the form of his life at the time at Leipzig. He is not in good form, in my opinion, currently at Bayern, but has had a very good World Cup. Rabiot is a guy that's been cut from French squads before. Controversially, in 2018, he was cut, but the feeling was that he's not a great influence in the dressing room. You can go on and on and on. Marcus Thuram, a guy that wasn't even on this squad and has now come in replacing Christopher Nkunku, who got injured the day before, I think, the roster deadline, and he's contributed. So, Deschamps has kept a really happy camp this time, and we don't see any of the fissures we saw with the star-laden side in Euro 2020, and even between family members in Euro 2020. So that's to his credit. As far as Argentina, it's great for Messi. I would have preferred to have seen Croatia or the Netherlands or the United States or Japan or somebody else on that side of the bracket in the final, or Brazil. But credit to Messi, credit to Argentina for making it this far. But I think France, to me, are getting these sorts of contributions out of guys that you wouldn't expect or that have not been great contributors for the national team before. So there's something very special in the French camp, and I don't think that's being talked about enough. I mean, this is effectively a lot of guys that Deschamps would have had on his B team even 6 months ago that are coming in and doing the job, and that's something to behold.
Yeah, that just shows the depth of this French squad. But for me personally, I'm happy with the final. Argentina, I mean, Julian Alvarez has been spectacular. You mean, it's just scary how good he is. And not getting as much playing time as I'm sure he'd love to at Manchester City. But when you have Haaland and Alvarez as your strikers, that's pretty amazing. But Argentina against France, I think in many ways is a dream final. I'm sure Fox and Telemundo are happy. Yes, Croatia did really, really well, as they've done in the previous World Cup too. And then Morocco, to me, has been the story of this World Cup. Just an incredible performance from start to finish. And actually, even against France too, you mean they came close. I mean, there was Lloris had to be on his A game in order to keep Morocco from scoring. So all in all, I think it's a really, promises to be a good final. And of course, to the Argentina fans, I think in many ways, I mean, just think the incredible passion that they show. You can show how much it means, not just to them, but also to the players and to the country. It almost seems to be destiny that for them to win this. However, I mean, France, of course, a fantastic team. So England's out, Kartik. I thought they played really, really well against France. And I thought actually over the course of those 90 minutes, they were the better team. But that's football, right? It's sometimes it's not the best team wins. Sometimes it's the team that finishes their chances. And of course, Harry Kane with that penalty miss really, 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 really hurt England. Although that wasn't the deciding factor. It could have definitely helped England at least get to extra time. And then from then, probably, who knows, England might have gone through. But overall, I think really, really satisfied with how England did.
Yeah, I think that the previous World Cup against Croatia, they scored early in that match and then were dominated. I mean, it was actually pretty embarrassing in a way that Croatia had to go to extra time to win that match. I guess that speaks for England defending well. But and then Italy, I think same thing, second half of the match in the Euro final and then extra time, Italy were the better squad. So I think England leaves this tournament eliminated at an earlier stage, but feeling better about themselves than that Croatia game where they were absolutely bossed. I mean, that match was very one-sided. And the Italy game where, on the surface, Italy was probably slightly better. So, I think they can feel good about themselves. One quick note on Morocco. I think they've been the best team in this World Cup. The best teams in World Cups don't always win the World Cup. Let's talk about Brazil 1982, right? They were the best team in that World Cup. They didn't win the World Cup. And I think we can point to some other examples. I would say Germany in 2010 was probably the best team in that World Cup. But then they ran up against Spain in the semifinals and lost. Morocco, if you take the body of work, which is a term we use in American sports, right, or in college basketball in America, you take the body of work, group stage, and their three knockout stage games, including the loss to France, I think overall they've been the best team. But that's not how one-off elimination tournaments work, and it's France and Argentina in the final.
For me, Kartik, I have enjoyed this World Cup. I've watched every game. I've been working throughout the entire month, of course, for World Soccer Talk, writing about it, editing, etc. But I'm going to be glad when this tournament's over, just because it has disrupted the season, and there's been so much controversy, so much negativity. It is one of those things that, it feels wrong. It feels wrong in many ways. However, the players and the coaches and the teams have risen to the occasion and have played really well. It's been a good tournament to watch overall. There were a few games in the group stages. There were kind of the nil-nil kind of games that weren't that exciting. But overall, it's been a good tournament to watch. But I am glad it's almost over, just so we can move on and back to the club season.
Yeah, I'll make one other point is that, and this is unfortunate, because it's a Winter World Cup for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, daylight hours are constricted. And I will admit that I'm today going to start catching up on a lot of yard work and errands because by the time the games end and you decompress from the games, or if they go into extra time in the knockout stages, the sun's going down, right? So my yard is a mess. There's all sorts of things that I think we put off during this World Cup. And I realized a couple days ago, it's because it's a Winter World Cup. If it had been a Summer World Cup, I still, usual time for the World Cup. For those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, you have a couple hours to do things. And I'm surprised the Homeowners Association hasn't flagged my yard yet, honestly, and like said, hey, what's going on? Why are the weeds so long? Why is the lawn so long? Why haven't you trimmed your branches? That sort of thing. Because this is honestly the most negligent I've ever been with it.
Yeah, and I think we have to mention too the United States, Kartik, men's national team losing against Netherlands, of course, but all of the controversy post that in terms of Greg Berhalter in a conference talking about a player that was disruptive to the group of 26 and trying to decide what to do and kind of talking through that whole process at a leadership conference. And then the information is leaked publicly. It was meant to be kind of behind closed doors. It was published publicly. And then from then on, you mean it's been just hellfire in terms of and then Gio Reyna responding, his agent responding, criticizing Berhalter indirectly, really. Kind of, if you read between the lines, he's definitely criticizing Berhalter for, you mean, kind of talking about this. I mean, my take on this, Kartik, is that Berhalter did decently well with this U.S. men's national team, but got out-coached against, of course, a world-class manager, Louis van Gaal. However, the Gio Reyna incident, to me, in that first half of that Netherlands game, after about minute 20 or so, when the U.S. were losing, was it 2-0 by that point, or 1-0, they were getting completely dominated in midfield. However, then they did get possession, but they couldn't do anything with the possession. And I think I tweeted it. I said, like, we need to have Gio Reyna on the field so he can unlock this Dutch midfield and Dutch defense, because that's what we're lacking is that creativity, because we were basically passing the ball sideways, backwards, but none of those penetrating through balls or none of those kind of really creative passes that would rip apart that Dutch midfield and defense. So to me, I'm on the camp of, like, hey, Greg Berhalter's contract is up. Let's look at all the possibilities of some other coaches out there that could be hired, because I don't have a lot of confidence in this coach if he's going to lead us through to the next World Cup. What's your take on this, Kartik?
I disagree strongly on the Gio Reyna thing. Look, if a player is not giving effort in training, this is not that you have to spend a month with these guys. Okay, so if a guy is sulking, not giving effort in training, that ultimately infects the rest of the group. You have to go to team meals with this guy. You have to stay in the same lodging as this guy. You have to ride on the team bus with this guy. I think too many fans don't understand these dynamics, and I'm really kind of horrified by the reaction, which is, oh well, Berhalter's at fault. Now, I do think Berhalter didn't handle the situation great. I think you either send the guy home or you forget it, right? At that point, and I personally would have done what Gareth Southgate did with Ben White. Send him home. We know Deschamps has had an issue with Benjamin Pavard in this, who's, of course, a World Cup winner from the last World Cup in this tournament. So you send the guy home. Instead, Berhalter handled it kind of like, you talk about a leadership seminar he spoke at. He didn't exhibit great leadership here. He then tried to form some sort of consensus, threatened to send the player home, but then had the player apologize. So at that point, it's over, right? And you move on. Maybe there were tactical reasons for not playing Reyna. It's tough. I even see this with Manchester City and Liverpool. It's tough to fit a playmaker into a 4-3-3. So maybe that required a rethink in terms of formation. But yeah, I'm actually kind of horrified by the number of U.S. men's soccer team fans who have just an aversion to anything Berhalter does. And I don't like the way he was hired. I personally, I'm with you. I think that the U.S. should look around for another manager, preferably an American manager, in my opinion. But, you know, if there's a standout foreign manager that understands the American game, that would be good also. But I don't like the fact that so many fans of the national team have reflexively taken the side of a player who, in a normal circumstance, in a normal camp, you would send that guy home. You cannot have that at the club level, but especially at a national team level, when you're away from home, you're away from your families, you're with the same guys for 4 weeks. And I can't stress that enough. I think a lot of the fans that have caused an uproar, and even some of the journalists who have, although I think there's been a different take from journalists and from most of the former players. And I liked Alexi Lalas's take on his State of the Union podcast. I liked Steve Nichols' take on ESPN FTC. His take was essentially my take as a former coach. You can't have this in the camp. Now, whether Berhalter handled it properly or not, we can discuss. But the number of people who were reflexively saying, oh, well, Reyna acted out because it's Berhalter's fault. And, oh, well, it's no big deal what Reyna did. You know, you just forget that. I don't see it that way at all, and that's not the way most coaches would operate, honestly. If a player comes in with a bad attitude, a player is spending several days dogging it in training, for lack of a better term, then you have a problem that could infect the entire squad. And in spite of this, the United States made the knockout stages, which is about their level. So I'm not dissatisfied with Berhalter, but yeah, I would look around and look for a replacement. And obviously, there also may be a situation where Berhalter has taken a young group, he's grown the young group, but you now need to move on to someone maybe more pragmatic because he's very wed to his own style of play, which I think is more a club thing than a national team thing. In a national team, you have to be more pragmatic.
Yeah, Gio Reyna does not have a history of bad attitude, I mean, or sulking, or not training at the highest level. So my question is why was he sulking? Why was he having a bad attitude?
That shouldn't matter.
It shouldn't matter. Kartik, let me finish.
Okay, go ahead.
But we know that Gio Reyna was told that he wasn't going to get much playing time. So if you're a player and you know how good you are, and you and I know how good Gio Reyna is, right? You mean look at Dortmund, look at all these kind of top level coaches. They see the creativity in this player. And if he's told, he's in camp, he's like, hey, you're probably not going to get much playing time in this World Cup. What's your reaction going
to
be?
It's just natural. Apply yourself because you have other guys. Okay, so he's the most talented guy in this squad, bar none. I don't dispute that. He's the best U.S. player. But the coach has made a decision. How does that impact someone like DeAndre Yedlin or Shaq Moore or Christian Roldan or Luca De La Torre, who are on the fringes of this squad, if they see the biggest star sulking and not applying themselves? And they're going to think, oh, I'm not going to play anyway either, so I'm not going to apply myself. And then suddenly you only have 10 guys training hard? Come on. I mean, you have to, and you never know what can happen. Berhalter made his decision for tactical reasons on Reyna, I suppose. Whether you and I agree with that, I think we probably both disagree with that.
Well,
but you can't have a player behave like this in a camp. It's just as simple as that. I don't care if he doesn't have a history of it. He did it this time.
But why pick him for the squad then if you're not going to use him, right? I mean, if you're going to have that attitude. So, no, I mean, to me, it's a poor man management from Berhalter, right? He didn't deal with the situation. You either kick him out of the squad or you leave him in or try to work with him. But if he was going to be, I mean...
Yeah, I agree with that.
It has ripped apart the squad, and it probably might end up him losing his job based on this one incident. You mean which shows poor leadership skills?
I agree with that, although I think maybe him even saying it at the leadership conference. Look, I organized a conference like the one Berhalter spoke at, and we say things are off the record. Like, we tell everybody, hey, this is a private conversation, Chris, but then you have to expect it to leak out. Maybe, honestly, Berhalter is done with the national team and has said it, and this gives everybody a pretense to move on.
Well, and the reality is, though, Kartik, I think I'm sure probably you know too, is probably it's unlikely that the U.S. Soccer Federation is going to change. They'll probably sign him up for another couple of years and then move on. I mean, they've got so many other headaches to deal with. I don't have a lot of confidence in the U.S. Soccer Federation that they'll make the right decision here. And it's probably easy. Let's not rock the boat. Let's just keep things as they are. I mean, because in many ways, the Berhalter signing, renewal, is a reflection of Ernie Stewart, is a reflection of the whole hierarchy within U.S. soccer. So I would not be surprised at all if they just quietly go ahead and renew the contract over the holidays and then move on. Because when you think about it, too, the U.S. has a couple of friendlies coming up. They play Serbia, I think, in January, and I think they've got another friendly in January, too. So they've got two friendlies coming up pretty soon. So I don't foresee a change. I think there should be a change. At least look at some of these other candidates out there. But yeah, you and I, Kartik, I think in terms of U.S. Soccer Federation and the lack of leadership, I think you mean we've seen that for many years.
Let me point out something there too, because the U.S. has never done coaching searches quickly. So in 2006, Sunil Gulati fired Bruce Arena and embarked on this long coaching search, which yielded nothing, and he ended up having to quickly hire Bob Bradley as an interim manager before that, because they had the same thing. They had a January camp this year. I think that year we were playing Denmark, Denmark B team, obviously, because it was January. So that you're right. The clock could run out if they're not doing something right now over the holidays. Just to finish up on this, I agree with you. I think once, and I said it earlier, once Berhalter didn't handle it properly, the proper way to handle it is to send Reyna home, period. When you don't handle it that way, and then you start trying to talk to senior players and other coaching staff members, and then talk, you know, consult the group, and then have him apologize to the group. I think you've lost you kind of lost it at that point. So if he is a strong leader, if he's decisive, and this guy's acting out, you send him home. But I completely reject the narrative that Giorena's never had these problems before. We don't know that for a fact, in spite of Dortmund's statement. And secondly, it doesn't matter. He came to the national team camp with some sort of a sense of entitlement, and he acted out. And in a short tournament, when you're with the same guys, I reiterate this, and taking the team bus and eating team meals with the same guys, you can't have that. But I agree with you. Berhalter didn't handle it well. You send him home, or you kind of forget it. That's it, right? It's one or the other, and he didn't do either.
So let's move on to another related to the World Cup in many ways, but also to U.S. soccer, and that is the sudden shocking death of Grant Wall last week. This one was something that I think I saw on, I think Friday night, late at night on Twitter or someplace, and I thought, like, this must be a joke. This must be a meme or something, like a cruel joke, and then within 10 or 20 minutes found out that it actually was real. When Grant Wall reported on Fox's self-imposed censorship a couple of months ago to not report on any of the off-field controversies at the World Cup, who could have imagined that he himself would become a major off-the-field story at this World Cup? And not only that, but also his former employee or a former employer, Fox Sports, would be forced to decide whether to discuss the news at all, since so much of Grant's recent reporting has focused on the human rights abuses and issues in Qatar. Fox's talents such as Rob Stone, Alexi Lalas, Landon Donovan, and Clint Dempsey must have felt really conflicted after this news. Of course, Rob Stone led the broadcast on Saturday morning on Fox Sports, for roughly 30 seconds with the news of Grant's shocking death, and was quite choked up about it, as we all were. Kartik, you've spoken this week on the record in a series of television interviews and in your article this week for World Soccer Talk. What was your take on how Fox Sports handled the news of Grant Wall's shocking death?
Yeah, so first off, I want to make it clear that whatever I say about Fox is not a reflection of Rob Stone or Alexi Lalas or the others on that studio team. I know they genuinely felt affection for Grant, and I know they were having a hard time on Saturday on air. I think they handled it as professionally as they could as individuals, and especially for Alexi. He's done so much with Grant Wall through the years. I've been on air so many times with him. Obviously, Wall covered him as a player and then as a general manager in MLS and then as a commentator. So this isn't a reflection of them. But I think Fox's upper management made a decision to downplay and minimize the story. I turned on Fox at 9 a.m. Eastern time before the Morocco-Portugal match on Saturday morning. And yes, I had set the expectation on Twitter. What are they going to say? How much are they going to talk about this? Fully expecting to be proven wrong. And in fact, what we got was, you know, a very tearful, it was tough for Rob Stone to even read what he had to read, but no discussion of Grant, no talk about his legacy, no talk about his impact on American soccer, no talk about his previous work at Fox Sports. And this was the case throughout the day. Now, if you flip the channel to Telemundo, I taped a segment myself from my iPhone of the TV, Telemundo doing a tribute to Grant, and then Telemundo Deportes PR tweeted out an even longer tribute, right? I guess I had only caught part of the segment, or maybe it was another segment during another pregame show. And there were tributes on the BBC. They mentioned it on ITV. TSN in Canada did a longer bit than Fox did about Grant, and had a frank discussion about his impact. So it's stunning. And again, just to reiterate this to the listeners, this is not a reflection of Alexi Lalas and Rob Stone and the other Fox talent, Stu Holden, etc., who I know would have wanted to do more on this and were having a very hard time even being – and I commend them for their professionalism on Saturday, getting through the day the way they did with a fallen friend, a friend having passed away like that. But the executives, the upper the brass at Fox Sports, they have a lot to be ashamed of.
And then the news continued, Kartik. So he died on Friday. The basically Fox mentioned whether it was 30 seconds or a minute by Rob Stone, which was a really I thought it was really well done. I mean, it was short, very, very short, right? But you could tell that it was definitely sincere. And then the news continued because, I mean, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we're recording this on Thursday, there have been news on NBC Nightly News, CBS Morning, Good Morning America, you name it, pretty much every major People Magazine, Time Magazine, Sports Illustrated, of course, ESPN, pretty much every major media publication in the Western world really has covered the story extensively. And Kartik, I have to wonder, you mean, if this World Cup was hosted, for example, in a different country, maybe it was hosted in France as one example, and if Grant unfortunately had died in similar circumstances on a Friday night, and then Saturday morning, you mean, we kind of wake up to the news and talk about it, how much different Fox would have treated that death because it was in a different country, not in Qatar. And I really think that they would have probably spent a good 30 minutes on it, you know, at least, or they would have kind of talked about it for about 30 minutes and then maybe mention it again a few hours later and do a special segment, or, you mean, kind of our memories of Grant Wall. And to me, it really is a poor reflection on Fox. And it is... It's unfortunate too, because Grant covered this story extensively. Both Grant and I were the ones who were very, very vocal, both in written word and spoken word, in criticizing Fox before the World Cup coverage even began, criticizing Fox for the decision to go ahead and not cover any off the field controversies. They said that they would cover the stuff on the field and stick with that, and they have. And this death was completely unexpected. I mean, nobody could have expected this. A former Fox Sports reporter and writer for the organization that worked for Fox for many, many years, probably on television-wise, that's the brand that he's most kind of affiliated with. When people say Grant Wall on television, they probably think of Fox. And for Fox to give this topic, this story, so little coverage, and like you said, Kartik, this must have been really eating up Alexi Lalas, Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey, Rob Stone, Moadu, all of them. All of them would have known Grant on a really personal level in addition to the professional level. So if, I mean, of course, you and I have criticized Fox for many, many years. And when they've done good things, we've mentioned the good things that they've done, whether it's Fox Soccer Match Pass or many of the other things they've done well. However, this is a perfect example, a really unfortunate example of a former Fox employee, you mean, dying tragically, the whole world covering it. And Fox Sports, for the most part, other than that minute, completely ignoring it.
Yeah, it was shocking, because another thing I should mention from Saturday and Sunday is every time I flip from Fox to Telemundo, a couple times they were talking about Grant, and I told you, like, I got my phone out and taped one of them. If I switched to CNN just to catch up on the news on CNN was Grant Wall. Four separate times over the weekend, I flipped from Fox covering the games to CNN, and each of the four times they were talking about Grant Wall. One time they had Chris Whittingham, who, of course, is a friend of our podcast, but a close friend of Grant's, someone we know well, on. Another time they had Sam Steckall on talking about Grant. So I was really stunned by the fact that the mainstream news found this such a big story, which warms my heart, because I love Grant and have obviously, as you mentioned, spoken eloquently this week, or I hope it was eloquently from my point, but spoken it about was. It. Thank you. From Grant's eloquence in promoting soccer as a missionary. But I don't find any rationalization for Fox's behavior. And I think it's not just Qatar. I think it's got to be FIFA, too, in spite of the fact that Gianni Infantino made a statement, and in spite of the fact that they ran a thing on the Jumbotron at halftime of the England-France game. And I also want to mention in Rob Stone's kind of him holding back the tier statement, it was obviously edited because he read only a portion of the statement U.S. Soccer gave. And what he read from the U.S. Soccer statement was the most non-controversial parts. The parts where U.S. Soccer got into his reporting and the hard-hitting nature of his reporting was omitted from Fox. And again, I know that's not a Rob Stone decision. That's an upstairs decision. So even in that 1 minute, they kind of botched it. And then they made sure they got Infantino's statement in there when there were a multitude of statements from personalities, Don Garber, USL, individual MLS teams, individual people involved in the sport in the United States that they could have read instead of Gianni Infantino, who, quite frankly, I didn't want to hear from after Grant passed. And so, yeah, I think it's not just Qatar, Chris, it's FIFA. So that might, you mentioned if this World Cup was in France, they would have dedicated more time to it. Yes, they would have, but they also still probably would have had some self-censorship because of the FIFA relationship.
Yeah, I've lost, it's hard to believe, but I've lost a lot of faith in Fox Sports. And this is even before this incident happened. I watched the first week, every single hour, 12 hours a day of World Cup coverage on Fox. And then after that, I don't think I've watched any more in the subsequent three weeks of the tournament. Been watching Telemundo and then listening to a lot of BBC Radio 5. So I've lost complete faith in Fox. I gave them an opportunity, an open mind going into this tournament, thinking, okay, maybe they were going to be different or try to be better. And then this was kind of the last straw. This that the Grant Wall thing was, which I didn't watch, but I saw. I did see it on television. I saw. I tuned in like you did, Kartik, to see kind of that opening, what they would say. But other than that, I've checked out completely. Which we'll get to in a little bit, because they've picked up the rights to Major League Soccer, which is another concern for me in terms of where Fox is heading. But a couple more things on this too, Kartik, because you mentioned the media covering this news, CNN covering it, et cetera, et cetera. MSNBC was covering it, I think, every hour. Fox News covered it. Fox News covered it, but Fox Sports didn't, right? Which is, you mean. So, I mean, obviously, it comes down to the ties that Fox Sports have with their multi-million-dollar sponsor, their lead sponsor, Qatar Airways, which is owned by the Qatar government, and also then FIFA, in terms of just trying to be in the good graces of FIFA, trying to make sure everything's kosher and everything's going to be fine leading up to the 2026 World Cup, and really putting profit and greed ahead of humanity.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And to me, this is the last straw. This was it. I have zero faith in Fox moving forward. Previously, I would have had some faith. The other thing about this, Kartik, is this death has had a huge, profound impact across soccer fans, journalism, media, and beyond. And I can't think of a soccer player. When was the last time a soccer player passed away and had this much publicity in terms of, I mean, people giving tributes, people talking about somebody? To me, this goes beyond that. I mean, like, if I had to think of kind of one of the most famous soccer players in the United States who died in the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, maybe Giorgio Chinaglia from the New York Cosmos. I mean, kind of a really... I can't think of anyone who passed away that has had this much press or publicity or tributes or kind of focus. What about you?
Yeah, I can't either. And even the Maradona thing, when he passed away, it was they talked about it for a day on the BBC News and the global news, and then kind of moved on. So the Grant Wall thing is fascinating, because I think it also reinforces to us how much of an impact journalists and writers and commentators have in the broader scope of things in terms of this sport. And Grant was unique. He was kind of on a pedestal in terms of the game in this country. But yeah, it speaks loudly to the impact that that commentary and journalism at TV and print media have, and the internet have, on how we consume this sport and the importance of those mediums in this sport. And I think it kind of reinforces, Chris, in a way, if you want to look at it this way, in what you and I do and what other people who are in our field do, because it's been awful. It's been a terrible 6 days for me personally because of Grant's passing. But it's also been gratifying seeing the amount of people who feel like they were impacted by him and impacted by his work and the importance of his work. And sometimes people try and throw you on the side and say, you're just writing about soccer. It's just a game, right? But you see in the way Grant's passing and Grant himself was received how important it is to millions and millions and millions of people, and how important it is even within the greater community of journalists who cover anything, whether it's entertainment or politics or business or travel, how important Grant Wall was in that bigger community. I think it's very gratifying, in spite of the fact that we're so unhappy and so in such sorrow about his death.
Okay, so let's move on to TV streaming news. And like I mentioned to you just previously too, that about Fox Sports. Fox Sports have acquired the rights to Major League Soccer. Major League Soccer finally closed the deal, the television deal. So for the past basically like a year and a half to 2 years, actually, it was probably 2 years of discussions. And Fox shopped around the rights to Major League Soccer that ended at the end of 2022 to several different broadcasters, ESPN, ESPN, Fox, Univision, of course. Fox gave them the opportunity to renew the deals or talk about renewing the deals. It was also shopped to a lot of other places too, Bleacher Report, DAZN, Turner Sports, HBO Max. You go down the list, there's a long, long list of companies that would have had discussions with Major League Soccer. And here we are. So we're at the tail end of 2022, going into 2023. MLS season starts in 2023. We know that in February, we know that Apple TV has the streaming rights, exclusive streaming rights for the next 10 years. And by closing that deal the way that they did in June, I think at that point they were like saying, okay, hey, enough's enough. We can't wait any longer. We are closing the deal. We're moving forward with a streaming deal. And whatever happens to the TV side, whatever happens after that, then guys, come on in with the offers. And what happened was basically 6 months later, a deal is finally done. ESPN is not interested. ESPN walked away. and decided not to go ahead and go for MLS rights. So for the first time in the history of Major League Soccer since 1996, ESPN's not going to be involved on streaming or on television. So Fox Sports have picked up the television rights and the TV rights. It ends up, we have all the details at worldsoccertalk.com that goes into the nitty gritty. But Fox Sports will have, on average, about a game a weekend on television, and that's it. So if you, for 2023, if you want to watch Major League Soccer, everything's on Apple through their MLS Season Pass subscription. Some of those games, actually probably a lot of those games, will be available for free in the first year. But if you want to watch it on television, the games will be one a week. And it's either going to be FS1 or Fox, and that's it. On the other side, Univision, so Televisa, Univision, TUDN, passed on Major League Soccer, on the rights to Major League Soccer, and instead picked up the rights to the League's Cup. So they have a select package, not every single game, but they have a select package of League's Cup, which includes the League's Cup final, which will be played on Univision. So Kartik, and then Fox will also show some of the League's Cup, but Fox will have the one a week MLS game and then a small number of the League's Cup games, which actually the League's Cup games also they can show on Fox Deportes. I think on the MLS side they can also show those on Fox Deportes, but League's Cup is with Univision. So Kartik, there's a lot to take in there. I mean, but kind of on a higher level, what do you think this means for Major League Soccer, and what do you think this says about their previous partnership with Soccer United Marketing and US Soccer, where the rights of US Soccer were combined with Major League Soccer, and then US Soccer decided over a year ago to cut that off and each go on their own? Where are we now with Major League Soccer?
Yeah, I think this speaks to losing the US, the bundle with the U.S. men's and women's national teams, and that going to Warner Discovery, Turner Sports, and HBO Max, or you know, whatever streaming service replaces HBO Max in the future. But that being split off, I think has had a negative impact on MLS's ability to shop their rights. Now, they got Apple to bite, which I think is a great deal for the league. Apple probably overpaid for it, let's be honest. So that's great. That's good for the league. But then the inability to get anyone, any linear broadcaster to jump has got to be seen as a bit of a failure. Now, finally, they get Fox secured, and that allows Fox to continue their buildup of U.S.-related storylines into next summer's Gold Cup, the Euros in 2024. Presumably, if they have the Copa America rights in 2024, which I think they'll certainly be the front runner for, and then World Cup 2026. But the bigger story here is ESPN and Disney pulling away. This comes after Bob Iger takes Disney back over. I had reported several times on this podcast, and I think in writing on World Soccer Talk, that my conversations with shareholders at Disney, there was dissatisfaction with MLS because MLS, when the new deal was signed in 2015, the deal that expired or expires this month actually, but you know, in theory expired a couple months ago because the season had to end earlier because of the World Cup. When that deal was made with Univision, Fox, and ESPN, there was an expectation set by Major League Soccer, Chris. And I have to keep reinforcing this because there have been people who misunderstand what you say and I say and what our site says about the ESPN relationship with MLS. There were numbers promised. There were metrics that were supposed to be hit by the end of 2022, right, by the end of the deal, that were not anywhere near being hit. So you can say, oh, well, the Premier League ratings are stagnant also, and oh, MLS is getting more viewers than it used to, and cherry pick stats. But it is relative to the expectations that were set. So Disney shareholders, many of them did not want to continue with Major League Soccer unless the rights were effectively given to them for a song. And then in addition to that, you have the streaming component stripped out by the Apple TV deal. And that's really important to ESPN Plus and to the brand that Bob Chapek, the former CEO, was building via the streaming platform. I think Chapek, you could also argue, maybe overpaid for La Liga. So that factors into the desire on whether you keep Major League Soccer or not. And then I think Iger's come in, and it's been a pretty easy decision, okay? We were with you for 27 years. We saw, you know, we saw some good times, no doubt. We saw the 96 MLS Cup final have great ratings on ABC, the 98 MLS Cup final. We saw Freddie Adu's debut game in 2004, which was on ESPN, or I think it was, or maybe it was on ABC, but have 1.5 million viewers, which is still, you know, a great number for a club soccer match. Even with the Premier League on NBC over the air every week, they don't hit that number all the time. And some other high points, MLS Cup, which Atlanta United was in, was a great number for ESPN. But that's the thing. It's been inconsistent, and they have not hit the target consistently enough. The week-on-week number, Chris, is not as high. I can absolutely, with certainty, report this. Is not as high or anywhere near as high as ESPN had hoped it would be at this point, and as high as MLS had thought it would be at this point, or at least had communicated to ESPN in 2015.
The funny thing about this, Kartik, is that if you talk to a lot of MLS fans in regards to the TV deals, they have so much criticism for ESPN. They're like, ESPN never promotes Major League Soccer. ESPN never shows MLS on SportsCenter. ESPN never talks about MLS on ESPN FC. So on and so forth. And I think it's how soon... Well, I guess... They're spinning it, right? Because they know that ESPN's walked away. ESPN wasn't interested. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them at all. I think it's a good move for ESPN. There's no incentive for them to continue with Major League Soccer, especially when Apple has all the streaming rights. And ESPN Plus is such a pivotal part of the ESPN portfolio. So I think it's funny that fans are quick to criticize ESPN. ESPN's done a fantastic job of covering MLS. Out of all the leagues in the United States, they're available to us in the United States on U.S. television and U.S. streaming. The league that has been promoted the most by any broadcaster is Major League Soccer. You can watch World Cup games, even World Cup 2022 with Fox, and they're talking about MLS, MLS this, MLS players here, MLS players there. ESPN, even during games or FA Cup games or League Cup games or even back in the day was when they had Premier League games, they'd be like, hey, coming up later today, we've got MLS game, this, and this. This league has been promoted crazily across all different broadcasters, and the proof is in the pudding in terms of the viewing numbers. Those viewing numbers are reality. That's how many people are interested. That's how many people show up and watch these games. And I think ESPN, out of everything that ESPN has done, to me, the shining moment that should show Major League Soccer and MLS fans is MLS is back. That tournament during the pandemic would have never happened without ESPN. And it was a huge success. It was a turning point for MLS in many ways. This was an amazing competition that they... This was very adventurous. This is very... Something different than we had ever seen. We were all kind of craving, wanting to watch live soccer games again. We had been so long since we'd seen games. There'd be sporadic games here or there. But MLS back was a huge success. And to me, in the history of Major League Soccer, in terms of television events that they've pulled off, this to me is up there. I mean, this is one of the highlights, and this was all due to ESPN. ESPN set this up. They set it up on their premises. You mean is ESPN's Wide World of Sports in near Orlando? And to me, that's one of many examples of how ESPN have done wonderful things to try to promote the game and try to promote MLS. Ultimately, the fans decide. I mean, ultimately, if the fans are not watching the games and the viewing numbers are nowhere near what MLS promised, then you look at it and think, okay, well, maybe this is a loss. I mean, if we move forward I mean, what are we going to get in return? And that's the other thing, too, about the Fox deal. Is, last summer, I think it was, the reports were that Fox had offered $7 million a season for the TV rights. And that was back in the summer. So with ESPN walking away, Univision walking away, you have to wonder in terms of how much Fox paid for the rights to Major League Soccer. Maybe they got them for nothing. That's quite possible. If not nothing, it's probably less than the $7 million that they offered reportedly last summer.
Yeah, and again, I think, Chris, just to wrap up here, you have MLS, and we have to give them credit. The Apple deal is a great deal for them monetarily, probably gives them some exposure. But being cut off from the Disney ecosystem, you can't quantify that necessarily in dollars at this point. You make a great point about the MLS's back tournament. They're not going to be able to stage something like that. It was a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. Maybe we never see the circumstance again, but they're not going to be able to go to Cupertino and kick it around in the lounge, the employee lounge at Apple, right? I mean, you can't have a tournament like that there, right? You need the power of Disney for some of these things. So I don't think it's a positive to be cut off from ESPN in any way. And as to the criticisms of MLS... of ESPN's promotion of MLS, ESPN promoted MLS an awful lot, and we would see promotions in all the avenues you mentioned. In addition, you have to remember SportsCenter and ESPN FC are independently editorial. They have an independent editorial policy, right? They're effectively a news division of ESPN. So yes, what rights are held by Disney seeps into some of their coverage sometimes, but they still try and maintain an independence about editorial content, and therefore they judge things based on newsworthiness, regardless of whether it's broadcast on ESPN or not. And this is why, in terms of ESPN FC, despite the fact that they've tried to push MLS narratives and Bundesliga and La Liga, right? Because obviously now ESPN has the rights to those leagues. They have oftentimes just reverted back to covering the Premier League and the Champions League as their go-tos because that's what the viewers are interested in. And it's just that simple. So for people who say, well, they don't promote it on SportsCenter or ESPN FC, you have to understand that news divisions are at least, they used to be fully independent. They're now still quasi-independent. And editorial decisions are not always made based on what a programming is showing after your broadcast. It's based on other considerations. And that's why MLS has fallen down the pecking order.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, too. I mean, to me, I'm a huge fan of this Apple deal. I think the Apple deal side of it is fantastic. It gives cord cutters access to every single game. It removes blackouts. It removes all the issues with regional sports networks, all the complexity, all the kind of the things that got in your way of watching MLS games. Now there's no excuse. As long as you're going to be able to watch games on streaming, and with Apple in terms of the marketing push that they will give this is a huge win. However, at the end of the day, to me, this feels like that MLS has lost the TV war, but has won the streaming battle. And I think the streaming, in many ways, this is very risky. This is a risky move. This is something that, yes, you are going to be on television once a week on Fox or FS1, probably mostly FS1, unless, you know, Messi signs or some major player comes in and then now more and more games on Fox. But for the most part, it's not going to be much television coverage at all. It's going to be all streaming. And that's the way things are heading anyway. I mean, so, you mean, and the Bundesliga has shown that, right? The Bundesliga had an all streaming deal with ESPN. And now and again, you'll have, I mean, a game or two on television. But this feels to me a lot like that. I think the Bundesliga showed that you don't go invisible if you go streaming, that is the pathway to go. So in many ways, I think this is a very smart decision on the streaming side. But I think you're missing out on the TV side in terms of reach and being in front of people's eyes, especially with the Premier League being on there. You mean in terms of, you know, whether it's USA Network or NBC, it's going to be front and center a lot more than what MLS is going to be. Kartik, one more news item before we head into the listener mailbag, and that's about you cover the English Football League extensively, probably more than any other expert in the United States. You're on Talk Sport sometimes twice weekly, talking about the Championship, League One, League Two. One of the leagues that maybe doesn't get as much attention, perhaps, is the Vanarama National League, which is the semi-pro, non-league, kind of fifth tier of English football. And there's big news that came out last week, and you've got some more about it.
Yeah, and I want to give credit to The Athletic. They had reported that this would happen in September, but then didn't really follow up on it. Last week, soft launch of a streaming platform for the Vanarama National League. Now, BT Sport holds the rights, the streaming and broadcast rights, and they have relented and are allowing the second half of this season to be streamed. And we'll have a hard launch during the festive fixtures, Boxing Day. And so this gives you now access to the entire league and what's being broadcast, which also includes Wrexham FC, a.k.a. America's team, or at least Rob McElhaney wants Wrexham FC to be America's team. So this is a pretty big deal. BT Sports has the rights till the end of the 23-24 season. So basically, this has happened, I think, because of Wrexham. I think this has happened because Ryan Reynolds has been critical of the fact that BT Sport wasn't allowing Wrexham and the National League in general, but Wrexham, who were trying to grow their brand outside of the UK, and not just outside of the UK, but even within the UK, in terms of BT Sport not showing and not giving exposure to this competition, which they've had the rights to since they launched in 2013. This is a great bump for non-league football, for semi-professional football. And hopefully this streaming service will continue beyond when the BT deal expires, and the National League will be in a permanent streaming platform for people or be on some sort of permanent streaming platform for people to access all over the world.
Yeah, this is great news for fans of lower league football in around the world that follow lower league football. And it's not just Wrexham. There's, I mean, Notts County. There's a lot of clubs in that division that are really well known. And that's the thing, though, too, about this one, is that the best way to find out more information about this, we have an article on the homepage of worldsoccertalk.com that talks about how to stream the Vanarama National League games. And kind of walks you through step by step in regards to now it's possible. Before it wasn't possible, now it is. And like Kartik mentioned too, the soft launch has already happened, and the hard launch is happening real soon. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. Just a couple of items this week from our listeners. First up is Disco George, who wants to talk about Fox's coverage. Regarding Fox's shoulder coverage, there are so many good podcasts and YouTube channels out there that I haven't been compelled to watch any pre-match or any post-match coverage on Fox unless I miss part of the match and want to see the highlights. On the other hand, I'm enjoying Landon Donovan on match calls. He can speak from both a player's and coach's perspective, and I don't feel like he's yelling at me constantly. Yeah, I think Landon Donovan's been one of the few bright sparks of Fox's commentaries. Whenever I've heard him, I've enjoyed it for the most part. And then Dave has some thoughts about something that was brought up, I think, on last podcast about Soccer United Marketing, which is MLS's marketing arm. And Dave says, you mentioned Soccer United Marketing when discussing U.S. Soccer Federation rights. Mexico's equivalent of some is imploding FMF, covered well by Football Americas, giving a domestic league and its broadcasters too much influence over the federation trades away long-term sporting merit for short-term profits. I am happy USSF chose a different direction. So Kartik, Dave mentions that kind of Mexico's equivalent of some. Well, actually, it is some. That's the strange thing about this, right, is that MLS's marketing arm, which is Soccer United Marketing, is the firm, the company that's responsible for Mexico's rights, commercial rights, as well as TV rights, etc., as well as getting Mexico to play so many of the games in the United States. It's so rare that Mexico plays any games at home in Mexico any longer. And so Mexico going down that path, and then U.S. soccer cutting the ties with Soccer United Marketing, which I think is a smart move. And that means that more money will come into their organization. And I'm sure Soccer United Marketing will continue to promote Mexico pretty heavily. All right, listeners, if you have any feedback for us, any questions about television, streaming, soccer, or related to that, or want to talk about anything that we brought up in this podcast, be sure to reach out to us. We'd love to read your comments out on air. There's a few different ways you can get in touch with us. You can go to the worldsoccertalk.com website, click on pod in the navigation bar, and then look for the most recent episode and just leave your comments in there. You can go to email. You can email us, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com. Facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. You can send us a message through there. You can tweet us at World Soccer Talk. And also, if you want to, you can go ahead and leave us a voicemail. The voicemail number is 561-247-4625. So lots of different options there for you to get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you, and hope that you've been enjoying this World Cup so far. It's been a roller coaster. It's been some memorable moments for sure, some wonderful goals, a lot of controversy, a lot of negativity. I think after this World Cup's over, I'm looking forward to going to a spa for a day and just decompressing, because it has been, and that's the reality of this, Kartik, too, is just that, I mean, unfortunately, in some ways, a lot of people will move on from this, will not think too much about Qatar anymore in terms of all the lack of freedoms, the human rights abuses, etc. There has been a focus on Qatar during this entire tournament, and actually even before the tournament, of course. So they've been under the microscope. And I think a lot of us have learned a lot of things about what's happening in this country. But from on a personal level, I'm just looking forward to getting back to the club season. Clubs are back in the League Cup on the English side. League Cup comes back on December 20th. And then there's a bunch of games that week in the League Cup, including Manchester City against Liverpool on the 22nd. And then the 26th is going to be Boxing Day, and one of my favorite times of the year in terms of watching soccer. And there's a ton of games that week. Also, before I forget to, Kartik, one more thing, and that's that NBC is taking their entire crew and having their crew in England for the festive fixtures that week from Boxing Day, and then the day after that, Tuesday, Wednesday. So they're going to be at Emirates Stadium, a pitchside desk, as well as Old Trafford, a pitchside desk, and covering a lot of those games and probably interviewing a lot of people too, I'm sure, post-match interviews, etc. So I am looking forward to that for sure. Coppa Italia is coming back. We've got the Bundesliga coming back in January. La Liga comes back in late December. Serie A, early January. And there's a whole bunch of other leagues coming back too. Turkish League, Mexican League, etc. So there's a lot to look forward to. What about you, Kartik? Where can people get in touch with you if they want to send you a tweet?
And by the way, I should mention the championship started again on December 10th, and we saw a lot of players who played in the World Cup playing right away. Josh Sargent went 90 minutes against your side, right, for Norwich against Swansea, coming off an injury for the U.S. So guys are fit, which is a good thing. At least that early evidence is that they're able to maybe turn around after a week and play in league play. So we may not have as the extended absences that we were anticipating. Yeah, you could find me at Twitter at KKFLA737.
All right, Kartik, on behalf of everyone, thank you for being on the show. And listeners, thank you for listening to us. Kartik heading into another weekend of soccer, including the World Cup final, as well as other matches from around the world. What are you going to do, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football. We'll be right back.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.